to Minority Corner
with an Eke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues,
only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike. This week on Minority Corner, we've got a special treat for you guys. James was a guest on the lovely podcast called The Repeater. And we have that episode here for you today. How exciting. And before that, I'm going to be talking a little bit about Twitter etiquette and maybe what we should be doing on the social meds. And just, you know, kind of rambling, ram-a-dam-a-ding-dong with you guys because it's Neke in the house. All right, y'all, let's get to the episode. Neke here, giving you a little introduction before we get into James's wonderful, amazing interview he did on the podcast called Repeater with Patrick and Evan. And I'll get into a little bit of what that means and what you're about to embark into. It's fantastic. I listened to it on my way home today. But before that, I kind of want to talk about something that's been on my mind lately. I have been frequenting the Twitters, as you will. I feel like I've got myself caught in a loop sometimes where I go to Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and like seeing the damn fucking same shit over and over and over and over again. And yet I'm just like caught in that loop. So I've been trying to break myself of that loop. But one of the things that I've noticed in that loop, we talked about Kanye last time and all of the madness that's going on there, is how people like to post jokes. So me included, I'll see something funny and I will retweet with a quote saying something snarky or whatever about the tweet. And I usually try and stay away from things that are kind of harmful or really inflammatory. But I see a lot of comedians, a lot of friends do the retweet with quote on things from our terrible president, from other terrible politicians, from things that are said just for the joke. And it's been bothering me for some reason. It's really been a thorn in my side where I'm like, you know, they get those retweets. They get those clicks. And those clicks are used for money, for their message getting spread further out there. It's in more people's feeds if you retweet even with a funny quote. So that just feeds the flame, y'all. It just like, whew, feed that flame. Because mostly when people that we're dealing with, they don't care if the attention is good or bad. You know, as long as the attention is on them. So I was once again in my loop again, and I was on Facebook, and Francesca Ramsey, she's amazing. She just got a book that's coming out called That Escalated Quickly. Check that out. She's amazing. She's also going to have a show on Comedy Central. She linked up this little video from Jay Smooth, who operates on his page called The Ill Doctrine. I've been following Jay Smooth for a really long time. He was a radio host. He's great commentary on the public. He just, anything that's going on in the news, he has something to say about it. And it's usually really funny and thought-provoking and good. So he's talking about this one woman who basically took Childish Gambino's video and redid it her own way. She's a white lady, and she has been known to kind of stir up controversy. She did something that was body shaming. She's done stuff against feminists. She's done stuff against black people. She's really kind of tongue-in-cheek, likes to be, ooh, I'm controversial. I'm saying some bullshit. And he posted a whole thing about how we need to stop sharing their content. And I couldn't agree further. It's like that bully in class. If you just ignore that bully, they will leave you alone eventually because they're going to move on for another moving target. It took me years to get that lesson because I would always engage. If someone would tease me, I would be like, oh, don't do that, and cry or whatever. And that would flame that fire. So basically, I guess what I'm saying is, and I'm going to try and test this theory out myself, is just I'm not going to engage. If I see something that's funny, I will take a picture of it with my phone. You know, what is that? Screen grab? Do a screen grab, because then they don't get the retweets. then they don't get the clicks, because the clicks equals money, the clicks equal attention. So if we can minimize the clicks, then maybe a lot of these ego beasts that are out there trying to suck up our attention, trying to keep our spirits down, trying to be provocative in the sake of self-promotion, maybe they'll start to go away. So we need to stop engaging in that stuff. Oh my God, it's like so frustrating. Another thing that I want to point out, I was listening to this podcast called Hidden Brain. Highly suggest it. I love it. It's all about like brain science, and it's real pop science-y, and some of the things are a little like, come on, guys. But there's this one episode that really resonated with me, where it's, why do we focus on the negative things that are happening in life when we have so much good things that are happening? Like that phrase, the bad apple spoils the bunch. So during the Hidden Brain, which I highly suggest you guys listen to anyways, you should find that episode. They talk about, it's basically kind of like our lizard brain going into action. Because if you were to eat something poisonous, you could die. Versus if you eat something delicious, you'll be fine. So that's why we've been focusing on negative stuff so much, is because we're hardwired to pay closer attention to negativity, because that is what's going to affect us the most in a base level of disgusting, nasty ass food way. So I've been trying to, you know, be a little bit more open to the idea of really happy when something good happens, even if it's like, ooh, I found a parking spot. That's good, you know? So that's kind of what I've been focusing on to help me with social media, because social media has been, it has been hard to engage with it lately, especially when you've been, if you're kind of in a down mood, which I've been a little bit lately, it will really stick with you as a thorn. So I don't know. James is usually the one that likes to talk about, you know, feeling good and self-help and bettering yourself. Whereas I love myself a fart and poop joke. But this time I'm just kind of, you stuck with me. You got a little bit of Neke's tidbits. So I hope that was okay. I hope you guys liked it. So now let's get into this episode. So I'm going to kind of lead it up a little bit. The Repeater. Now, The Repeater is a monthly podcast. You should look it up. It's www.repeater.show. So The Repeater Show is basically the hosts, Evan and Patrick. They talk about people's favorite songs. So they'll invite a special guest on, one special guest or two, depends. And that guest will talk about their favorite song of all time, usually kind of giving a story that goes along with it. If you love music, which I absolutely do, this is almost like hanging out with two really cool dudes and just going on and on about the type of music that you like, the stories behind it, how it really affects you as a person, how it changed your life. Because music really does. Music, like, I can't even, there have been so many songs in my life that I will hear it and it will take me right back to that time when I first heard it, or I listened to it on repeat over and over and over again. I mean, on my cell phone, I got a running list of karaoke songs. I haven't been to a karaoke club in a minute. Hello, friends that listen to this, take me to a karaoke club. I need to get my sing on. I need to really test out my theory on Enjoy the Silence by Depeche Mode. I feel like I can sing that, okay? So, that's the show. And James was asked to be a guest on the show. I'm so jealous. Well, I don't live in New York, but I would have loved to be on this, but James does not disappoint. James loves himself a Janet Jackson. So his song was Love Will Never Do Without You, which is, come on, one of the top Janet Jackson songs. Top songs ever. Okay, so he'll be talking about the song, the music video. James is a dancer, so of course he's going to be talking about some dancing. And you know how we like to fucking get real angry over Nipplegate, okay, 2004, when Janet Jackson was rudely accused of something that Justin Timberlake did, which we've talked about on this podcast. So James talks about that. Also, before they get into his song with Janet Jackson, there's a little bit of talk about Carly Rae Jepsen, who I love, how she worked with Blood Orange, which is, another tip, go check out Blood Orange, because usually he is the one that's behind a lot of these hot pop songs. that are out there that are so good. I can't even, his stuff is so good. Like all of Solange's EP where it's like Losing You. He did a couple of songs on Don't Touch My Hair. Her latest album. He is an undercover genius, and he worked with Carly Rae Jepsen. So they go into talking about that. They talk about hecklers and audiences who were heckled themselves. They run the gamut. It's a really good episode, really fun. It's almost like a picnic for your brain. Just take this out to lunch and enjoy yourself with a little bit of sunshine. And let's get right into it.
A dog in a car at a bar on the street. Yay!
I'm Aleigh Gringo, a small dog owner. My dog Pistachio howls when she's excited.
And I'm Renee Culvert, a big dog owner. My dog Tugboat tips over when he's sleepy.
And we co-host a podcast called Can I Pet Your Dog that airs every Tuesday. We bring you all things dog.
Yes, dog news, dog tech, dogs we met this week. We also have pretty famous guests on, but Legs. We're not going to let them talk about their projects.
No.
Just want to hear about those dogs.
We don't want to hear about your stuff. Only your dogs. So join us every Tuesday on Max Fun.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Repeater. My name is Evan.
And I'm Pat.
And today we have actor, podcast host, online video host, and author, James Arthur.
Wow, that was the most exciting introduction ever. Can I have you just wake me up every morning like that?
Sure.
Yeah. I could barely contain myself.
I was like sitting, I'm like, who is it? Who do we have? Oh, it's me. Oh, yeah. Whoa. You sound pretty cool.
You do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you do sound pretty cool.
Do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, then that's very exciting. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. This is so cool.
Yes. As I'm sure we've explained to you already, but we like to talk to somebody about a song that means a lot to them.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to do. But before we do that, we're going to talk about something we've been listening to lately.
Lately.
And yeah. That's going to start us off.
Yeah. Great.
What you got?
So I'm going to start off with, I went on Thursday and saw this band Metz. They're from Toronto. They played what I would consider too late. They started at 10:45, and I wanted to be in bed.
Yeah,
But they were great, and they were a lot of fun. And the song that I wanted to talk about was, it's on their new album, and it's called, which one was it? Raw Materials.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about it because it made me very happy. There was a guy in the crowd that kept shouting at them to play Raw Materials, and the band very clearly had a set list, and we're like, we're not. We're doing our thing. And he kept shouting and he kept shouting it. And so the crowd, to shut him up, started saying Ontario, like chanting Ontario.
Yeah.
Because it sounded close enough to Raw Materials. And the entire crowd shouting Ontario back at him pissed him off enough that he just left the show.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, cool. That song is powerful.
I love when the crowd starts heckling the heckler.
Yeah, it was great. It was wonderful.
Yeah, that's a beautiful, beautiful story.
It made me so happy.
Yeah, I love it. I would be remiss if I did not mention this. I went on Friday night and saw a talk at the New Yorker Festival with Carly Rae Jepsen.
What? Future guest.
Future guest, hopefully.
Yeah, bump me. Go get her.
She's in town.
Yeah.
She was. But I'm a big Carly Rae fan.
Really?
Yeah. And so I went, and there was like a Q&A portion and all this stuff. So, I mean, you know, I've been listening to her music over the weekend and stuff because of seeing her. And it was cool. Yeah. She is very much like the casual bud I think I expected her to be.
Okay.
There's like nothing. I've never had like a... I think people... I'm kind of... My social media presence would believe... lead you to believe that I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah.
But the reality is, like, I like her a lot.
Can I ask why? Yeah. I'm so curious. You're the first person that's been like, I'm pretty ride or die, Carly Rae.
Yeah.
No shade against her.
Yeah.
I just, I've not met anybody that had a strong feeling about her either way.
Yeah. She, well, I think it was, and this is what the interview focused on, in a way that I was almost, I think it was very much what the audience wanted.
Yeah.
but also, I don't know. It was interesting. I'm still kind of thinking about it, but it surrounded around her album Emotion, her latest album from 2 years ago at this point. And that album is really the thing that like got me on board with her in a more serious way. Sure. Like I loved Call Me Maybe. Yeah, great hit.
Song of the Summer.
Song of the Summer.
Still in my head now.
Apparently Song of the Century. Really? Highest grossing song of the century, I believe, so far.
Well, I guess okay, first Isn't I'm like, wild? Wait a minute, but we're only 17 years exactly. into the century. Exactly. But hey, she's kicking it off to a good start.
And she just I saw this because I have a Google alert set up for her.
Of course.
Wow, you are diehard.
Yeah. She just passed 1 billion views on YouTube on that video.
Holy shit.
So she's now in, there's only 20 videos on YouTube that have passed that mark.
Wow.
And so she's like a top 20 YouTube video of all time.
That's great. She's beaten like porn. That's huge. Like that is huge.
Really huge.
That's a huge accomplishment.
But yeah, so a lot of the talk focused on her album Emotion. Yeah. And one of the songs I was thinking about from that song a lot is the song All That, which was, co-written by Dev Hynes of Blood Orange. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him.
Yeah.
He's worked on a lot of stuff, and it was cool because one of the he's a guy who has worked with a lot of different people and has kind of like had this long career, even though he's still pretty young, because he used to be in like indie rock before he got into R&B and pop and stuff. And it turns out, like, one of my first interactions with him in the R&B and pop world was that he produced all of Solange's EP, the one that had Losing You on it. I'm trying to think of the name of that EP. But he produced that whole thing, and it's fantastic. Yeah. And then somebody was asking Carly about collaborators and collaborations that she's done, and she referenced that's the song All That, which is the song they wrote together.
Yeah.
And she said that she found him because of Losing You by Solange. Like, really? She heard that and she was like, who is that? Yeah, I want to work with whoever made that. And it just felt like this moment of like, almost like it confirmed the things I thought I liked about her, which is like, oh, she actually just has a similar ear maybe to me. And I like her music because she likes the types of things I like.
Right, yeah.
You know?
There's that synergy there.
Something like that,
Well, I think that's also, too, like, I haven't heard a lot of her, like, new stuff, but the articles that I've read, I'm a bit of a reader. I don't like to listen to music, I just like to read about it.
Of course,
It makes sense, right?
Yeah.
But she was, like, because I think anytime, like, because she could have very easily been this, like, one-hit wonder, right? She's literally billed to be, right?
Yeah.
And she has the opportunity to sort of reshape what her sound is, or even just get even more deeper into, like, what her sound is. And I feel like, from what I know, that's what she did on her last album.
Yeah, I think the one-hit wonder gave her the freedom to be like, oh, I actually have time and money now, and I can choose people to work with, and so I'm going to do all of that and make an album I want to make.
That she want, and that's the key thing, because she could have like tried to be like, well, what does the industry want me to be? But I think she doubled down onto like more of who she was, and that was like, seems like a winning formula.
Yeah, and I think not every pop star, especially if you're billed as a one-hit wonder, doesn't get to do that, or you don't have the presence of mind to do it. And it's just cool that she seemed like pretty well adjusted, and maybe that's the difference between breaking out at 18 and breaking out at 28. She was like a decade older than a lot of the people she's going up against.
It makes a huge difference, because she didn't have to like re-break out of like any like bubblegum sort of image. And also, like, she drove herself, because she through YouTube, right? She was
she got her launch. Her like launch was because she was on some Canadian version of like American Idol, basically. She was like a runner up or a third place finisher or something like that. But that also wasn't the first album she'd put out. Like, as a independent pop artist, she'd put out albums before she had Call Me Maybe, you know.
But like, compared to like my Brit, who was like, you know, manufactured in this amazing, you know, pop bubblegum factory or whatnot, and then had the woes to go through with that. She kind of was in the driver's seat of her own career more so than other pop sensations.
Yeah, and I think in Canada especially, they excuse me.
Oh, yeah.
In Canada especially, they really put money into the arts.
Oh.
Like the state will give money to artists, which is an interesting concept.
I mean, which revolutionary, I know, some might say. Money into the arts, but why?
And like, it's a good amount of money. Wow. And so I think that helps foster a lot of this kind of stuff.
Also, yeah.
It just helps the movement of everyone flocking up to Canada. So well done. God, well done.
I hope. Let's go. Let's move. Let's get parkas and go.
I'm out.
Oh, yes, please.
And I'll do a follow-up single called Call Me Now. It's more of a desperate song.
Don't even wait. And what's something you've been listening to lately, James?
I just got back from a whirlwind European tour. It was over, just living my best life. I was over in Amsterdam, and there's this artist that, and every time I go to Europe, I listen to her. Her name is Laureen. Do you guys know about Laureen?
No.
She's got double E's. It's like, it's Laureen. It's like Lauren with two E's in it, right? She won the Eurovision contest back in 2014. She has this like, this is like the one Eurovision song that I think that made it across the seas. Like, it's this song called Euphoria, and she's got this amazing like she's got these like pipes on her, and she'll sing to like these amazing sort of like Euro dance beats, but not the annoying kind. Like, they've got like some energy behind it, and her entire album, it's like, it's weird because you're like dancing, but she's also really heartbroken too at certain times. Her music is just fantastic, and she's been really releasing just like little nuggets of like songs here and there lately, because she really just had like the one album that she did back in, maybe this is, no, she must, this must have been like 2012. I don't know. I'm not a calendar. But because then she like, she did this one album, and then she re-released the album, just adding in like two or three more tracks. But like, the album's so good, like I feel like she could get away with doing that. And then recently she's just been releasing like a few more songs here and there. And she's just giving me life. She just is giving me life. Yeah, she's amazing. Laureen, two E's, highly recommend her. She won Eurovision. I try to sing it, but it won't. I don't want to turn you away.
Right.
Sure. I don't want to turn you away from it.
I got to look her up. She sounds right up my alley.
Yeah. I think you like her. Yeah. It's just that right blend of like, my heart hurts, but I'm going to dance a little bit with it. Like, it's all like sort of epic the way that she does it. Yeah.
That's some of my favorite stuff.
Yeah.
Epic dance music.
Eurovision is like surprisingly good with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to wade through a lot of not so great stuff, but every once in a while something
there's
pops.
There's a little gem that comes up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it gave us ABBA.
It's true.
It did.
But like, and watching the Eurovision event is one of the most incredibly weird and delightful things I've ever done.
Yeah. Because it's weird. Like, it just really, it's one of those things, like, not only did like football, and I mean like soccer, not really, you know, catch on over here in the States, but Eurovision especially did not. Like, it's so huge over there in Europe. It's like the Olympics of singing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also like a 6-hour event or something. Once you like add in all the voting, it's maybe too much, but I enjoyed it.
I think that it's literally why there's not been war in Europe for a while. It's literally like their Hunger Games of the like, let us bring our tributes together. We'll sing it out. And that's why there's been peace.
Wow.
That's my theory.
That's a good theory.
That's a good theory,
right?
That's a good
theory. Sing it out.
I think we should just accept that theory. Walk through life believing that to be true. What song did you want to talk with us today about?
Okay, well, this, when you talk about the show and you're like, James, what want you on the show? It was a regular Sophie's choice, because I was going to choose, it was between A-ha's Take On Me and, but what I'm going with is Janet Jackson's Love Will Never Do Without You.
Amazing. Great. Let's listen to a clip of it right now.
Yeah.
Oh, yes,
right?
So for our listeners, you just missed some real good lip syncing.
Oh, my God.
James was having it.
Well,
it was good.
You had quite the bobbing going over there, too.
I was bobbing.
We were both lip syncing for our life. But, like, try to not smile and listen to that song.
Yeah, I also had the benefit of also watching the music video from where I'm sitting.
Yeah, I got distracted by the music video.
It's so good.
It's so good. It's so good. But before we launch into it, Pat, why do you think James chose this song?
Why? I think that you earned money from doing chores at home and went out to Tower Records and got yourself the ka-single of this song.
Okay.
Okay.
I saw that you have background as a choreographer, right?
Oh, look at you doing that research.
Did a little research.
CEO.
A little digging. And I'm trying to. I think there was probably a song off of this album that you choreographed something to very young, or learned a choreography to very young. But this was like. I mean, maybe this was a song you did choreography to, but I almost think that this was like a different track on the same album that hit harder, like with you personally.
Wow.
That's my guess.
Dangerously close. It's a really a nice little hybrid of both.
Okay.
Not really. I just wanted to, you know, make sure you don't feel so bad. Yeah, that's crazy. You know, it's interesting about this song because I am a huge, like, I love a good dance track. Because, like, you're right. I'm a dancer. Mm-hmm. And Janet is, like, she was my dance teacher. That's how I learned how to dance, is that I would watch the music videos and learn in slow motion, rewind as many times as I could. And then fast forward as an adult, like, that became part of my career as I was teaching dance classes based on pop star choreography for Barry Flash Mob. And then I started my own dance company. Because people want to learn actual, like, Rhythm Nation or If. They don't want to know your own little funky-dunk dance. They can't pull that up at a wedding.
Right.
No one's going to know what they're doing. They need to know the actual, like, movement.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because this music video doesn't really have, this song doesn't really have a lot of dance or choreography to it.
Right.
But this music video specifically, like, my mom had a VHS tape of Janet Jackson music videos up to this point.
Yes.
So it had her stuff from Control up to, this was off of Rhythm Nation 1814.
Yeah.
Which I still understand why that year.
I can't figure it out. Like I think today, like, looking this up was the first time where I think I noticed that 1814 was a part of the title.
Yeah.
I never, and I'm like, I know that album. I've never even given credence to the fact that year is in there.
Like, it wasn't the year that slavery was abolished. Like,
and then you look at the the art for the album, and it's like, that also doesn't quite fit either. Like, she's dressed up.
Like a train conductor.
Right.
Right?
Not 1814.
No, not 1814 at all.
More like dystopian future than anything else.
But that's kind of, I guess, the theme of, like, but was 1814 some sort of dystopian future?
We don't know enough about that year.
Yeah.
We're not calendars.
We said earlier, listen, we're not calendars here, people. We're not. But this song, like, it's one of those songs similar to why I was so torn between this and A-ha's Take on Me, is that, like, you can't listen to the song and not have a smile on your face. Mm-hmm. And when you watch this music video, Janet Jackson's smile is so infectious, right?
Yeah.
It's just this beautiful, infectious smile. And it was her first time of not even really trying to do a lot of dance choreography, just really kept it simple.
Yeah.
The music video is very, like, intimate. And the lyrics, it's so funny because, like, I'm not a person who, I'm not in love currently at all. Mm-hmm. But this song, when I listen to it, makes me feel like I'm in love. And anytime I am in love, this is the first song that I start listening to. I'm like, because it's in that, like, hopeful, optimistic part of being in love. Like, your friends are saying, oh, I don't know, I don't think this is a good idea, and you're like, no, but I'm in love and we're gonna make it. Like, they said we wouldn't last, but we had to prove them wrong, you know.
Right,
it's that, like, Romeo and Juliet, like, bust through the barriers type love. And I feel like most of the relationships I've been in have been those, like, impossible odds. And we did not overcome them because I am currently
they
single.
Were good for a little while, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's always so fun when you were able to be in, like, this song talks, like, to me, it's like that best part about being in love.
Yeah.
And if you are part of that, like, slim percentage that's able to get through all, like, the stuff to hold on to this love and let this be your song, like, it's amazing. Oh, and do you want a little tidbit about this song?
Sure.
So in the first verse, Janet sings it at a lower register.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And she never really does that. She does that in If, and that's about it. And I was doing, and the reason why is that originally this was supposed to be a duet between her and maybe, like, Prince and Johnny Gill. And so they were like, hey, just Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis,
they're
amazing producers. They produced pretty much most of her albums
and
like for 3 decades. It's amazing, except for 2 of her albums. The Jermaine Dupri album was terrible. I hate his sound. But they were like, sing it like a dude. And she did, and they were like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's great. Let's just keep it there. And I think it works. I'm glad.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think Prince could have sang this song as low as she did.
Probably not.
Right?
Yeah.
And then it's so great because at the first verse, it's almost like this secret, you know, about the love that they're having and, like, you know, overcoming the obstacles. And then the second verse, it's her voice at this higher octave, and it's just so – you feel – the full love of the song, you know?
And I think the video is such an important part of this song. I think not only because it's great, but also, like, the era in which it was out, you know, music video was make or break.
Yeah.
Could be, at least, in those days. And trying to imagine this video with like another star in it or another, you know, another name is tough because it's her and these like couple of dudes that are so hot, but
hot,
don't
Jesus.
Matter. Like, no. she is the person in it and they are just like these statues that, you know, she basically flirts around.
Yes. She made them. What was so great too is that like the video is so sexy and you touched on it too. She's really sexy in the video too, but she's very clothed. She's wearing just a simple top and some jeans. And there's something so intimate about that. And her blonde, it's a wig, hair is like up, but it's something so simple and sensual about that. And the men become her video hosts.
Yeah.
These like muscular ass men. Do you know who the guys are in the video?
They're actors of some kind, right?
Antonio Sabato Jr.
Yeah.
And not gonna butcher his name. Digimon. He was in
perfect.
He was in Blood Diamond and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh yeah,
yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do know who you're talking about.
Digimon
Hansu.
Him. Yes.
Yeah.
And there's this great, like, I mean, him and Antonio, I'm getting tingly just thinking about this music. but, like, you just, I think that was one of the music videos, like, as a kid, not knowing I was gay, but knowing something, I was like, this is very attracted to what's happening here.
I think I had the same reaction to Janet Jackson as a kid.
I think everybody...
I'm just being like, I don't know everything, but I know that this is cool.
Yeah.
I think this was the defining video for everybody, I think, where they realized something. Something sexual.
There was that other one I remember vividly a few years later. She's got the chain between her ear and nose, I think. Oh, this was like 1995.
Together Again. This was 1998.
Eight. Okay.
And that song was about a friend of hers she lost to AIDS.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And but her in that video, I remember being... I was way more the right age, I think, to be...
Like, this is more appropriate.
To be a little bit more like, oh, all right, Janet. Thank you.
See you, yeah.
Yeah. But... yeah, she has this way, kind of what you're talking about with the hopefulness and everything. It's interesting to watch the video too because she could sell anything with her smile.
That smile.
Yeah, and she does make it feel like hopeful.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, even though like the song is, I think, in that way, her look and the way she sings it, her selling of it gives you that impression just visually.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's the first time that we didn't get to see her choreographer, Tina Landon, who did like If and like was with Janet for most of the 90s. They had a falling out. You guys want to know the gossip about why they had a falling out?
Yes.
Please. Okay. They had a falling out because Janet allegedly, I'm going to put that there. Allegedly because Janet knew about an affair that Tina Landon's husband was having. And Janet didn't say anything about it. It's a tough situation to be in, you know?
Yeah.
But they did have a reunion. Then they did a tribute for MTV Video Music Awards for Michael Jackson after he died. Mm-hmm. And all the choreographers, like J-Lo's ex-husband choreographer, Tina Landon, they were all on stage together. And it was like a big sort of reunion. Why was I talking about that? Oh, because Tina Landon, she choreographed just simple movements for Janet to do. And that was so interesting, too, because we're used to seeing, you know, she had already done Rhythm Nation and Escapade and Control, like all these big dance numbers, and this was so pared down, and it connects to my childhood. So I was 6 years old at this when this music video came out, and this song in particular, if you listen to it, this is the new sound of the next decade sort of coming in. It's less sort of synthesized. The instruments have a higher quality. I mean, I'm not a musician, but, you know, they have like a more real sound to them. They're less of like the guitar and like fake noises and more. There's a saxophone that like becomes, she hits this note and you can't tell where her note in the end ends and like this saxophone begins.
Yeah.
Which is such a cool moment.
There is, and I don't know if it's within that moment because I can't think of it off the top of my head, but there's a trumpet on this track played by Herb Albert.
Oh, really? Wow.
Like the Herb Albert.
Really?
Isn't that nuts?
That's pretty crazy. Amazing.
But I mean, I guess that's when you're Janet Jackson and you know, you have Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis producing you. They're like, hey, we need a trumpet on this. It's like, well, go get the most famous trumpet player that you can think of.
And he holds that note that becomes, that's the one I was talking about. That's what it is. It's a trumpet.
Yeah.
That becomes that note that she's singing. And it's such a seamless, you know, note. Because Janet's got a great voice, but you know, she's not like... Well, Mariah Carey's old voice, not Mariah Carey's new voice. Of course. I think no one exists anymore.
Be kind. Be kind.
To Mimi? Yeah, sure, absolutely. She's delightful. but I just, yeah, that's all, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's so impressive, like, to go to have this song that feels really complex, like it's dealing with incredibly complex emotions, and like the music is both, I don't know, to me, it, like, the first time I listened to it, I was like, there's a lot going on here, and there is a lot going on there, but it's kind of held to this very simple, it's a very simple kind of song.
And yet it still somehow takes you on a journey. Because if you think about when you're the first, like, it, even the way it starts, it's sort of just like a bum, bum, bum. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, and then the beat kicks in, and then it's the lower, it's a lower octave. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the second verse, it's the higher octave. And then she brings in, like, the, there's more people. Like, it's almost like a chant for love, like, to believe. If you have a love that you believe in, it's like, chant for it. Mm-hmm. And then they do a whole entire different chant. Mm-hmm. There's like two different group chants in this song.
Yeah.
And then the trumpet hits. And by the time it ends, you just feel like you've gone on this huge journey to celebrate love.
Yeah.
I think they even get there in the beginning of the song with the kind of even the section we listened to almost a little bit. The chorus itself, like the real hook, is pretty short in this song, which, you know, and it's a very catchy hook.
Yeah.
And you would think like, oh, most people are going to really exploit that hook.
Sure.
But they have like a long pre-chorus, and they have like substantial verses. Like, they don't let that hook be the driver of the song.
Yeah.
They really, I think, let the whole song, you know, have all these different parts and be a piece.
Yeah.
Rather than just, some pop song container for a hook, you know, which is so common.
And then let it be 5 minutes still.
Yeah.
Instead of cutting it down to like two.
And this is what I love. This is like back in the day where they would let a song be like 6 minutes, 5 minutes. And like Janet will just like let her, the like they would find ways to keep the song going without just sort of like, some songs in the 80s, it's like, okay, Prince, why is this song going on 5 minutes, right? But like they would find ways to keep it so interesting that like the 5 minutes goes by, but like I'm ready to do it, you know, all over again. And I think it's so interesting too, similar to at this point, you know, I think this is technically Janet's, I believe, fourth album by the time 1814, Rhythm Nation, weird title, comes out. Because Control was her third album. Mm-hmm. But that was the one that most people really remember her for. Because she did two other ones before that.
Right.
But this is when she broke free of her dad at Control and I worked with, like, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. And so the same thing, it's interesting because she was able to explode from that bubblegum pop image really fast. And like, this is her just being a woman. And she's like in her 20s or something. But comparatively, I feel like when, you know, Britney was at her 20s, she was still trying to break free from that image, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was no doubt, I think, by Rhythm Nation that she was kind of like, you know, a woman and her own woman and all that type of stuff.
And had something to say. Like that album, like she's got so many tracks on that album that are so political.
Yeah.
She was talking about so much about racism back then. This is like this is the 80s.
An intentional goal of that album was like she went into that wanting to do it. And here's the crazy thing. Like we talk about maybe even Control being a little more well known, maybe in retrospect.
Yeah.
And then this album being political and having a lot of message. This album had seven top 10 charting hot 100 Billboard singles.
Seven.
The most of any album ever.
Really?
And was had a single in that ranking, I think, for 3 different years in a row, which I think is also the only album maybe to ever have that.
That's crazy.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
Like, it is by, like, even industry standards.
Sure.
An incredibly, like, an incredibly remarkable album.
Yeah.
Successful, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, that I do miss. And Janet was doing, she would do this up until, I think, Velvet Rope was the last time that she did this, because she was from the old school days when you made an album and you released a good portion of the songs. Mm-hmm. A lot of them would become, you know, singles. And she did that with, same thing with Velvet Rope. I think she had at least like 5 or 6 singles off of that. But yeah, like this album, and you can see a huge, like the way that, I think this was, I think, second to the last one off that album, but just to see, there's so many different looks that she had that came off of this, because she had the Rhythm Nation off of this, Miss You Much, where she does this amazing chair dance. It's black and white. It's kind of like an homage to her brother at certain points. They do this amazing chair dance. They do this All Right. All Right is on that one as well, where they're in the zoot suits. Just so many different looks. And like the album, it's interesting because it lasts for a long time. I think they recorded it from 1988 to 1989.
Oh, wow.
This song, in fact, was one of the first songs that they did. But it's interesting because it has the more, and maybe it's just because when it came out, like, but it has that like 1990 sort of sound, at least to me.
Well,
but
they were probably helping to set what that sound was going to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's what like Janet did get to do. She got to usher in that new sound. And I think that's like, it just like, and I look at to where like her career is like right now, and she's back on tour, you know, but she's not able to do like it, you know, Nipplegate.
Right.
I'm just talking like Nipplegate,
yeah,
like really
let's talk about it.
Messed her up. And it's upset. And it's just, Janet is like my girl. Okay. She's like my everything. And it just upsets me because, you know, we go back to 2004 and it was the Super Bowl. And just, I think, she was doing the halftime routine. Mm-hmm. She had a new album that was coming out. Great promotion. Janet's an icon, you know. At this point, she's still at top. And then her and Justin Timberlake were really good friends. Justin Timberlake had just started his solo career at this point.
Right.
And he had that song, like, Rock Your Body. And at the end of Rock Your Body, about a Have You Naked by the end of the song, I knew the line was coming up. And then that's when he, like, you know, undoes her thing. And it's then the nipple scene around the world. I remember when it happened. I was in a college. I saw it happen, but I didn't really know what I saw until, like, the news cycle started, like, playing it like nonstop, like Fox News, and like, my kids don't need to see this. Well, they're seeing it because you keep freaking showing it, you know?
Right. Sure, yeah.
And I think the thing that upsets me so much about it is like, nothing happened to Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson. Janet Jackson is the reason why we don't have live television anymore. There's a 3-second delay, FCC, 3-second delay because of that one moment. And to boot, who produced that Super Bowl is on which channel? CBS. Who was producing that? MTV. They're all owned by Viacom.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Viacom owns all the music video channels, so many of the radio stations. She had that album came out, and then I think like another album, Feedback, came out. And no, she had one more. Feedback did a little bit more attention on MTV. She had rebranded her relationship with them. Anyways, two albums that no one knew about. And this album, it was her Demita Jo album around this time. It's such a good album. It's one of my favorites of that decade. Her latest one is really, really, really good. I really recommend listening to it. Her Unbreakable album. Yeah, it's so good because there's songs about Michael. Mm-hmm. There's songs like and Unbreakable is amazing because she pretty much self-produced that album. Because she started her own record company because she had to start over because she was blacklisted from all, whitelisted from all like these.
There you go.
Yeah, change that around.
Yep.
But I think it speaks to, I think, both the racism and sexism of this country because she is a black woman. Nothing happened with Justin. I side-eye Justin so hard because he did not stand by her. And you look at the way his track record, he like drives Britney through the mud. Like I'm shaming him. I'm shaking a finger right now.
Aggressively.
Yeah. He gets away with a lot.
He does.
Because
he's the cool white guy.
He's a cool white guy. He's charming. He can be funny.
Meanwhile, that whole clip on TV was the thing came off, and they cut away real quick. That's it.
That was it.
And it's a human body. It.
Come on, America. It's a boob. It wasn't even like a full boob. It had like a pasty thing on it. Which, like, who was on the planning team and why did no one say this is maybe not the best idea? But okay, it happened. We went too far. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a true tragedy. Because, people have forgotten the Soho albums from that time. Demita Jo, you said.
Yeah, that's so good. Go listen to Demita Jo.
20 YO.
Not good. I'm a huge fan. Hey, I got a side on my heroes,
you
too.
You got it. Sure, got it. Yeah. And then Discipline and Unbreakable.
Yeah, Discipline has some good tracks. It's her, like, being really nasty on it again. I think at that point, like, she was really trying to, like, just do whatever it was going to take to, like, get the fans back in or whatever. And there's some good tracks off of it. Feedback and Rock With You, which has an amazing video. Really great dance track on that one. Unbreakable is one of those albums, like, I can listen to it all the way through. Same thing, like, with her Velvet Rope, that, like, Unbreakable will take you on a journey. And not a lot of artists do that anymore, where you really feel like it's a full cohesive album. Sometimes you feel like Rihanna does this a lot, but that's because Rihanna had like 8 albums back to back in like 8 years, right? Because she was literally like, we every year had singles from Rihanna. We never had a break from her because she would record her music while on tour in a bathroom, like wherever she could. Wow. She was always working, so she was always able to drop an album, but her singles were great, but not in the album. It wouldn't have like a cohesive feel to it, whereas I feel like, you know, Janet would, especially with her Unbreakable one, really took the time to really work through what the arc of it was, the journey of it was. And like Rihanna's one of those artists, like, I don't think she has any unreleased tracks. Put it on album, let's go, you know? Some artists who have all these unreleased tracks, is not everything's going to make it onto the album, which not everything probably should, you know?
go for it, Pat.
is having like a cohesive story something you're looking for in music or theme or whatever?
It kind of depends. Like, there's some moments when I'm like, I want to listen to an album and I want to go on a journey. And I've been like that a lot actually recently, because Britney's last album too, Glory, same thing. And it's been a while since she's had her Britney Jean. Yeah, boring. Like, not a really good album. Like, who put this together? And I was so surprised because Will.i.am, oh, who I just met at Will.i.am at Comic Con.
Hello.
Yeah, him and Taboo, because I was doing a thing at Marvel.
Very cool.
For Comic Con. What was I talking about? Not Will.i.am.
You were talking about Britney.
Yeah. So her last album, Glory, it's one of her best ones in a long time because cool. It has this cohesive sort of feel to it, but just in it, didn't really do too well. But you know, I think that I'm at that point now where I'm in my 30s. Mm-hmm. And my artists are less popular by the teens.
Sure.
You know?
Right.
On the plus side, it means that my concert tickets will be cheaper, you know?
true blessing.
Right, yeah. Because that's the thing. Janet's on tour right now, and she's mainly does, like, smaller venues because she can't really do the big arena things.
Right.
Which is weird because, like, Madonna still can do the bigger arenas, but her albums don't sell. Like, the music industry, man, I can't keep up with it. I don't understand what's going on.
It's bad. I think that's one of the main things people say about it.
It's the one, and I am so glad that I'm an actor and a writer and a storyteller, because the music industry just seems so tough. And the thing that really gets me about the music industry is that there's usually some rich old white guy who's at the top who's not talented, who's making so much money.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's so hard because honestly, it's not like the industry is really looking for like new talent, and it's so hard for new talent to get in the first place because radio stations are closing down left and right. So it used to be you could go to your local radio station, get your tape put on the radio, your record put on the radio, you become a local sensation and then grow from there. Mm-hmm. But now it's so hard to be a new artist. That's why it's amazing that Carly Rae Jepsen was able to create something.
She has like this kind of, this second wave of her career now.
Yeah.
It seemingly might be sustainable. Yeah. Like, it's really cool to see.
Like, she's found like her audience and her niche. And I think that's something that some artists, they grow too big too fast. I think that's what happened with, like, you know, Lady Gaga. I think she was always meant to be a niche sort of artist.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
But like, she had one or two, a few of her tracks, like back to back, into that song with Beyonce. Like, she blew up fast, bigger than I think she was ever. Well, this is what her road was meant to be.
Right.
And then I think when she released her album, what was it? The Fame? No.
Fame Monster?
No, the one after that. Electric Boogaloo. No, it was I'm blanking on it. It was her third album. It was the one after Bad Romance, after that EP.
Art Pop, Joanne.
It was the one before Art Pop. Electric something, right?
This Way.
It was Born This Way. The Born This Way album. I was like, you can't be Born This Way. But there is a song called Electric Chapel on there. But the reason why that album also did so well is that she had a sale. They sold it for a penny on, I think, like Amazon or something.
Right.
And then when the next album didn't do so well, I was like, well, of course it's not going to be able to hit that, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And I think it's like letting artists be whoever they're going to be and like allow them to, like, she got to experiment when she did her Joanne album. It was a little bit more of a country sound and reflective of like her broken heart on the inside, because she had just fiance just like cheated on her, you know?
And she definitely comes from a singer-songwriter background. Yeah. Like, she's not just a voice that a bunch of producers kind of plucked out of thin air and say like, here's 13 tracks, go sing them.
She was like playing in nightclubs herself. Yeah.
So I think like that assessment of, oh, maybe she got bigger than she was initially meant to be. It's like, and she's meant to be more niche. That's probably totally true.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because if you're an original artist and you're really involved in the making of your music, you're going to end up being more niche than pure popular, you know? Like,
yeah.
And that's like the community that she's been a part of, which was, you know, she was with like a lot of the drag community. Mm-hmm. She was in there, and it's a little bit more underground. It's a little bit more niche. It's starting to become a little bit more, you know, mainstream. Absolutely. With like RuPaul's Drag Race and stuff like that. But I feel like that's where, and I don't know, I just feel like, I think that people are so mean, you know, like they're so mean to artists and people who create. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to judge others, and it's so easy to send a tweet and just be so hateful and so mean. Yeah. And so everyone's got so many opinions and such negative opinions. And it's like, well, what are you creating? You know? And like, one of my acting teacher once told me, he said, you know, no one ever erected a statue of a critic. He said, the critic is one of the most useless professions in the world. No one's maybe Roger Ebert might have a statue somewhere, but you know, other than that,
sure,
like,
yeah.
Huh?
No, I'm disagreeing.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, for those who create out there, like, you know, like just create, And also I think we ourselves, and I have to check myself too, be mindful of, you know, there's one thing to be mindful of like my criticisms, I guess, like what's the point of it? Mm-hmm. It's one thing to have like a dialogue of like, you know, oh, well, this film I thought was a little racist or a little sexist or a little homophobic. Well, there's an interesting dialogue. But just like, I don't know, just to be hating, just to hating about how something is so terrible. Like, I think that puts an energy into your body.
Yeah.
And then you start to have this really negative worldview. And so sometimes it's like, why do you need to put out all this like negative venom about something that someone's creating? If you didn't like it, great, move on. It wasn't for you.
And I think that happens so much with like pop culture too, because, you know, and like you said, there are fair and valid criticisms.
Sure.
Why you shouldn't like a thing.
Yeah.
But something that I've been annoyed by a lot recently is when I say, oh, I like this band or I like this song or whatever. And it's like, immediately responded to with, oh no, that's bad. Okay, so well, tell me why.
Yeah.
And if the why is just, oh, I don't like it, it's like, okay, I know you don't like it, but I'm telling you that this is something that
I
get enjoyment out of.
Yeah.
I think that's, I don't know, that's just conversations people need to actually have. Or sure. Just if you don't like a thing, just don't say anything. Like, that's fine too.
Yeah. It goes back to like the golden rule, you know, like treat others the way. Whoa, what's the one about like, if you don't have anything nice to say, then don't say anything at all. Right?
Yeah,
I think it's okay. I think, you know, especially this time of like the current world that we're living in, there's just so much venom that's out there. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think we need to rebuild some of our filters. And I think because of things like social media, you know, you can fire up. We're so quick to just being so reactionary that it's okay to sort of sometimes sit with some of those initial reactions that you have. If you don't like it, that's okay. It's one thing of like, listen, let me know, for example, you know, oh, I like Chris Brown. Hey, did you know that Chris Brown beat up Rihanna and is like, you know, big, you know, douchebag guy, you
sure.
know?
Yeah.
Let me know that. And then I can reevaluate, you know, my musical choices. But if it's like, you know,
yeah, I mean, I've lived a happier life in the last decade as I've gotten less and less angry about things I didn't really like that much. And now I'm like pretty accepting of most, you know, things people don't like. You know, I pick my spots, like Owl City. I hate him. But
yeah, we all have our things.
But no, but for the most part, I feel better kind of being okay with stuff and letting people like the things that they like, even if, you know, it's not really my thing. Because also I feel like the criticism is just better pointed at things that are actually a problem. You know, like even in the world of, like, let's just say pop music, it's like, well, you might have an artist who actually is bad for the industry and actually is a bad human.
Yeah.
And let's just like worry about criticizing that person rather than the one song from this other fine person's album.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
whatever it is, it's like, let's focus our energy if we're going to be dismissive or we're going to be negative towards something.
Yeah.
And Noisy did this interview recently, or they started this interview series recently where they ask an artist to rank their own albums.
Ooh.
Which is like really interesting.
That is interesting.
And so the one that I read was this band Mastodon, who are like a proggy kind of metal band.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I was reading through it, and I think they had did it with the drummer, and he was very clearly stressed about doing this. He was like, this is self-critiquing. I don't like this, but I'll do it, but I don't like this.
It's a good exercise, I think.
Yeah, and in going through that, they got to an album that I had listened to and not, you know, didn't really strike me as something that I enjoyed. And not that it was a bad album, I just didn't like it, not for me. And he was talking about that album, and he was like, yeah, for this one, we didn't really work on it that hard. We just decided that we were going to go meet up, jam, come up with some songs, and record them. And here's why. We were really stressed. A bunch of people we knew died. A bunch of people we knew got cancer.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, right. Also, people are also human beings and also have their own problems. And just because they're this band that you can find on Twitter or find on Facebook or buy their music or I don't know, it's just that filter of like yelling at people, because I feel like a lot of people when they criticize like that don't think they're yelling at a human.
Yeah. Because of, and you know, they're actually having to teach kids empathy. Because they're communicating so much online that, like, in person, you're less likely to say the really mean things that you would say if you can't actually see them, you know? Mm-hmm. So they're having to, like, reprogram ourselves of, like, connecting with each other. And that, like you said, remembering that the person on the other side is a human being. So I should remember that Taylor Swift is a human being. But you know what? My beef with her is that it's more political, you know,
sure,
than anything. Her music is, like, fun, but it's just, like, her politics. Like, same thing with, like... Like Katy Perry, like I can take or leave her music, and I just, you know, I don't really have. It's like more so like political with me with Taylor Swift, you know.
Yeah, I hear that for sure.
Yeah,
and I also think that's different in that when somebody has a platform of that size,
yeah,
that's a very different thing than like if I was to tweet Evan and like tell him to shut up or whatever. But like,
it's more so, and you know, that's what it is. It usually is my beef that I usually have with any of these more high profile people is that like more so like. Wanting them to do more with the platform that they have, or to be more aware of what it is that they're doing or what they're representing, you know?
Yeah.
Wake up.
Yeah. Totally. Or like in the context of Nipplegate, Justin Timberlake could have done something, could have said something. Yeah. And
there could have been so many conversations about that, or like, you know, taking any sort of ownership. He literally left this woman and distanced himself as far away from her as possible.
We are waiting, Justin.
Yeah.
We want something. Yeah. 13 and a half years later, we need something from you.
Waiting. Yeah. And then like I was reading this other article that like, you know, like, cause like back when like, you know, when him and Britney, you know, they're wearing the matching jean outfits at the VMAs. Like, oh man.
My God.
For the longest time I was still rooting for them to get back together, you know? But like now no. Like she's doing so much better. Like, you know, she's I love a single Britney too, by the way. Like her music is always so much better when she's single. I think with most artists, it's like when they're single, their music is just better.
And you got more time to work on stuff. You got more feelings to feel.
Listen,
I'm not going to knock my happy friends that are coupled up, but artistic vision really starts to decline when you're like happy and hanging out with another person.
So true. I'm so much more productive. Like I have, you know, I have my own podcast and, you know, I'm working at Marvel and I work at a tech company and I'm working on a book and I have my acting career. Like if I'm in a relationship, like I know this for myself, but I'm in a relationship, I'm just singing Love Will Never Do Without You to like my boo, like that's just like all we're doing, you know. But Justin Timberlake, he was like, what did he say? Oh, he went like he keeps talking about Britney, like he just recently, like it's been years, guy, right. Like let it go. And at first we were on his side because like, oh, she kind of cheated on him with, you know, the allegedly with Wade Robson, the choreographer that they both had, that they both were using, allegedly, right? And so we were like on, like, you know, poor Justin. But then, like, if you think about like, what he's done, like, he wouldn't let this go. Then he did Cry Me a River, made that creepy music video about, like, going into her house, and he had that, like, Britney, like, double or whatnot. And then he did, like, another one. It was What Goes Around Comes Around, and had her pretty much, like, a Britney-esque person die in a car crash, right? And then, like, he made some sort of, like, offhanded comment about her, like, recently. And then someone interviewed Britney, and they're like, Britney, who would you like to collaborate with? And she named him. She's like, I'm not going to work with Justin Timberlake, y'all. And, like, that's just where she is. She's a nice little, you know, country girl who has moved on with her life and had two kids, you know?
Yeah. Congrats to you, Brittany.
Yeah,
Brittany, Justin, all the snaps.
Clean up your act.
Get it together, Justin.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. It's very nice of you.
I think that's the perfect place to wrap up. James, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's been so great being here. Oh, one thing I meant to mention.
Please.
Earlier, just to take back something that I said. I said earlier it was a regular Sophie's Choice. That's inappropriate. Do you know what Sophie's Choice is really about?
It's about abortion, right?
That's what everybody thinks. Google it, and no, it's not. It's she had to choose. She was in Auschwitz.
She had to choose
which kid. The evil doctor was like, choose which kid is gonna die and survive. So my choosing between two songs was not a regular Sophie's Choice.
Yeah.
And anytime anybody says that, just remind them it's not a Sophie's Choice.
That is the kind of thing we need to focus our negative critiques on.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Correcting those phrases.
Phrase like, Sophie's Choice. Now hear you or watch you?
Oh my gosh, there's so many ways you can get involved with James Arthur here. I have a podcast of my own called Minority Corner. I host with the fabulous Aneke Fitz-Clark. It releases every Friday on wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, we're all over there. It's like Blue's Clues, only more black, queer, and ladylike. Yeah. And so you can follow us. We're on Twitter, Minority Corner, it's spelled with a K. And then I have a Twitter, James Arthur, @JamesArthur_M. And my Instagram is JamesArthurM as well. And I am one of the correspondents on Thwip, the big Marvel show, which is a show on Marvel.com and the official Marvel YouTube channel. And it's pretty much like a This Week in Marvel. Kind of like mix like Entertainment Tonight and The Daily Show, but make it Marvel. And it's a weekly little 8-minute show that you can catch me on.
That is awesome. Yeah. So I hope everyone checks all that stuff out.
This was so much fun. Thanks for having me.
This was so much fun. Thank you for joining us so much, man.
Yay.
And thank you to everybody at home who is listening. We greatly appreciate it. Until next time.
Rewind it back. Oh, wait.
Oh, I like that.
That's so good. Hit repeat.
Hit repeat.
Yeah.
We'll probably keep that one, but let's just do one more clean.
Yeah, sure. I knew it was coming. I was like, it's not going backwards.
We got to write it down. That's really the solution.
Never write it.
James, thank you so much again for joining us. And thanks to everyone else who is listening to this show.
Thank you.
Until next time.
Hit repeat.
Nailed it.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
The dirty one was probably better.
Repeater is hosted by Evan Ford Barden and Patrick Cartelli. This episode was recorded at Magnet Training Center in New York City, where they offer classes in improv, musical improv, sketch writing, storytelling, and more. Find out more at magnettheater.com. Visit us online at repeater.show for live dates, hot music tips, and show archives. Theme music by the Sun Lions. Everything else by Love Nest Productions. Welcome to Repeater.
Thank you so much to the over 28,000 members who joined or upgraded during the 2018 Max Fund Drive, and to all of our monthly members. You showed up in full force to help us reach our goal and to show our appreciation. We're putting up this year's batch of Max Fun Drive exclusive enamel pins on sale for all $10 and up monthly members. And just like last year, we're giving all the profits to charity. For 2018, we're supporting the National Immigration Law Center. The sale will run from May 18 through May 28, so don't miss it. $10 and up monthly members will be receiving a personalized code and instructions to purchase pins on May 17. So keep your inbox open and notifications on. For more details, head over to MaximumFun.org/pins. And to learn more about the National Immigration Law Center and support them directly, you can go to NILC.org.
Wasn't that fun? That was so much fun. I feel so good. I love hearing my Jamesy talk with other people, you know? Change it up a little bit, right? So, y'all know what to do. We're Minority Corner, spelled with a K. Tweet at us, Minority Corner, spelled with a K on Twitter. We're on Facebook, so make sure to join the Minority Corner Playground. If you're in that social media loop like I was talking about, that might be a good place to, like, stop that loop and engage with some awesome Minority Corner listeners on that. Don't forget to leave a review on iTunes if you feel like it. If you want to, it will help other people find the show, expand the community. I also want to thank all of you guys again who became donors and members with the Max Fun Drive. You guys are truly amazing. It never ceases to amaze me, the support that we get. And if you couldn't donate, no worries. I have a hard time finding that money too. The fact that you are listening, you are supporting. So thanks to all of you. I want to give another big thank you to Woody for being an amazing editor. The best. You probably hated me screaming into the mic like that, but sorry. Yes, keep tweeting us. Keep sending us messages. If you want to send us an email, you can send us an email at minoritycorner@gmail.com with a K. Remember, we used to do Ask Me Anythings. If you want to do an Ask Me Anything, we will answer it. So it's been an amazing episode. You guys are the best, and we will see you next week.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.